Next case is Octocat v. Polaris again. This is 2018-19-96. Mr. Jackson.
Your Honors, if it would please the Court, this is Jason Jackson. I'm representing Appellate Octocat. There are a number of errors below at the PTAB, I think, that warrant reversal, but there's one that permeates all of the grounds and is a legal error. And specifically, that error is the board's holding of use of a reference, the proposition that a reference need only suggest an element of a claim. Now, petitioner and the board point to KSR for the suggest language. And they craft a suggestion rule, both the petitioner and the board, to supply two critical elements of Claim 1. This is a clear legal error, Your Honors, because the suggestion language in KSR is discussed in the context of a motivation to combine.
What you have is a claim to a textured exterior portion, and you've got Tamashima, which is a design patent, but if you look at it, sure looks like the same as the drawings in your patent. You mentioned KSR. Can you imagine going before the Supreme Court and arguing the distinction between the 678 patent and Tamashima?
Well, that would be an exciting argument, I do agree on. But I think that the issue here is what was argued and what was relied on by the board.
And well, board, it certainly relied on Tamashima, didn't it?
They relied on Tamashima, but they relied on a brand new disclosure rule. As this body is well aware, under Section 102, pre-AIA, elements have to be either expressly or inherently disclosed in a reference. There is a, what do you call it, common sense doctrine that percolates out there. That's not an issue here. Neither the petitioner or the board have applied this common sense rationale. So the question is there a third rule of disclosure that applies to design patents? I think the answer is no. I'm not aware of Section 102.
Are you saying that the design patent doesn't use the word textured?
The design patent doesn't use any words. It simply claims the ornamental design for what's shown in the drawings. And the petitioner and the board don't even come out and say that the mud flap in Tamashima is textured. They say there are a couple of suggestions, maybe three, maybe four, probably more, that it can be maybe texture, stippled, maybe it can be a different material or a different color. And very tellingly below, they cite to the wrong portion of the MPEP, of the manual. The correct portion of the manual never says this grainy texture is used to indicate a functional surface treatment. And as the board correctly found, nothing in the manual says that is texture. So the claim, the interesting issue here, Your Honor, is that is there a third disclosure rule? Now, they cited to the... Is there a third rule of disclosure for Section 102 that applies only to design patents? That's the interesting, I think, legal issue here.
And they why isn't it, I guess, tell me if I'm wrong, I guess I was recalling what the board said was, there's an expert on the other side. The expert said, when I see a picture like this, it immediately tells me three things. It might be different color, might be different material, might be texture. So the actual teaching of this picture with, you know, no words to back it up, it being a design patent, actually teaches three alternatives. So there's the element of texture.
I understand that reasoning. My response, respectfully, Your Honor, is all of those three were suggestions, first of all, from their expert. And he said it suggests one of three things. Two of those things, color, different color and different material, two or three of those things are not what's claimed. So it's actually unlikely in their own estimation, assuming that there are three possibilities, that would be the denominator, it's unlikely to disclose texture. And I don't know how big that denominator gets.
I guess I'm not quite sure what that means, unlikely to disclose. It may be unlikely that the, I forget, was it Kawasaki who's?
Yes.
That their actual vehicle had different texture. But who cares about the actual vehicle? The question is what this document teaches the skilled artisan, and it teaches three ideas: color, material, texture.
Well, first, we disagree that it teaches texture. There's no support in the
manual. Puts that idea into the head of the relevant reader.
We respectfully disagree for a number of reasons, Your Honor. First, the Kawasaki patent, excuse me, the Tamashima patent, predates the filing date by 5 years or so of the ARCHICAD patent, 678 patent. If all of these design pressures existed in the art, all the reasons they articulate over a number of pages that would have led to this invention made it obvious since 1920, if those pressures existed and Tamashima disclosed, hey, let's stipple per claim one, this is great and saves money and doesn't show scratching, no one in the 5 years since the Tamashima patent stippled their fender. And Kawasaki undoubtedly has and had numerous persons of ordinary skill in the art. They're a big manufacturer of ATVs, been around a long time. We were unable to locate any evidence showing that any Kawasaki ATV had this unitarily molded textured fender. So they didn't understand that as disclosing texturing. It was so obvious.
Maybe they just preferred not to use it.
But the evidence that we have introduced, which has to be considered by the board, all of the evidence, I think refutes that, and I think is useful as a way to interpret and understand what the Tamashima patent actually discloses. It discloses a mud flap having a different color and a different material. And getting back, Your Honor, to their discussion of the Aslanian case, they cite that, my understanding, for the proposition that there is this third rule of disclosure. That's not what it says. The Aslanian case anchors its discussion of inherency, and this is in our reply brief at page 4, anchors its discussion of disclosure in design patents in the inherency doctrine, which is appropriate. The references have to expressly or inherently disclose all the elements of the claims. The petitioner below concedes that they're not arguing inherency, so the question is it expressly disclosed? And if we take the smallest denominator in this case of three suggestions, we respectfully submit that one out of three is not an express disclosure. How big does the denominator get before we say that's not express? Is one out of five not express? One out of 10, is that express? And they themselves use the language of suggestion. They don't say it affirmatively discloses and here's what it teaches. They say, no, there are three possibilities: suggest, suggest, suggest. And I'm not aware of any doctrine that grafts a third disclosure rule onto Section 102 as they have applied it here. And I think there's one statement from the board, Your Honor, that is very relevant for this error.
I gather that you must be saying that even though the only ground of rejection here is obviousness, not anticipation, that we need to apply essentially the 102 inherency or express standard at a element by element level.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what I guess maybe seems, to go back to what you and Judge Lurie were having a chuckle about, imagining arguing that to the Supreme Court.
Well, I think it's bedrock law, Your Honor, because even in an obviousness context, the first step is every element has to be disclosed in the prior art. Only then do you get to combinations. Every element has to be expressly or inherently disclosed. That is a 102 disclosure rule, if you will. I don't think there's any modification outside of maybe, again, the common sense doctrine, which has not been applied here.
What do you do with obviousness based on modification of a single reference? You wouldn't have a disclosure of the result of the modification.
Well, they have to show in the art all of the elements are present in references A and B, and together they show A plus B what is claimed. There's a very important statement by the board here that they repeated a couple of times. They admitted that Tamashima does not necessitate texture, does not necessitate. So putting aside what would be a lively argument at the Supreme Court on this issue, perhaps, the board's reasoning is flawed. They say it does not necessitate texture. They didn't find it expressly discloses it. They didn't find it inherently discloses it. They found the texture is one of three or probably more than three suggestions. So the board's reasoning here is legal error. That is what we submit, and it permeates all three grounds. There, I think, is some overlap with a common sense doctrine that this court has seen a handful of times, but again, that principle is not applied here by the petitioner or by the board below.
You want to save the remainder of your time for rebuttal? Or you can continue if you wish.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll save my remaining time. Thank you.
Mr. Morton, welcome back.
May it please the court, hello again. The 678 patent is not a technical improvement. It's undisputed that injection molding of vehicle body panels with smooth and textured portions was well known. The 678 patent is just about doing that on an ATV and where to put the textured portions. So it should be no surprise we relied on a design patent, because really where to put the texturing is a matter of ornamental design choice. And this is why once the board concluded that texturing in areas that may be subject to scratching on an ATV is obvious, there's nothing else inventive about any particular location that may be scratched, so all the claims are obvious. And they were all found to be obvious on all three grounds. On appeal, Articat has raised multiple issues, but I would suggest that they are all being reviewed for substantial evidence. Where we have expert testimony, they chose not to depose our expert or to put in any counter-expert testimony. So it's really...
Can you address what Mr. Jackson was, I think, focusing on principally, which is use of design patent drawing that being made that is neither an inherency use as to what it teaches, nor, I think it's, nor a express teaching use, but a use based on what it suggests, though it doesn't expressly teach, and it, according to the board and I think the testimony, it suggests three possibilities. Is that, why is that a permissible way of deciding whether a claim element, even in an obvious analysis, is to be found in a particular reference?
So, I mean, I think you have exactly right what happened. Our expert put in testimony on this, and the board cited that and credited that testimony as reliable on the three different possibilities, and then applied the KSR teaching that there's a finite number of predictable solutions. Here it's different color, different material, or texturing. So I think that analysis is, you know, exactly following KSR for an obviousness analysis, and I like the mention earlier, I was going to bring it up, you can have a one-reference obviousness case or decision where obviously you don't have every element there inherently, or else it would be anticipation. So you can show that based on the knowledge of one of skill in the art, a claim element is obvious.
Would you be making the same argument if this were an anticipation case, that you don't have to have either an express teaching or a showing of necessary, of necessity, and therefore inherency?
I would not. The board, we did not argue inherency. The board did not find inherency. And if I was trying to argue anticipation, I know I have to show all the elements present in the reference. But this is an obviousness case, so that's not what we're doing. A couple more points on that, Your Honor. First, the Articat has cited the Vivint decision, where the board did rely on inherency to find a claim element. But in that case, this court also concluded the error was harmless because another reference in the combination also disclosed that same element. And the same is true here. The board expressly found that Malonio, for the first two grounds, and Kia, for the third ground, disclose smooth and textured surfaces on a unitarily molded part. And for Kia, it's specifically on a vehicle body panel. So this smooth and texturing, the idea of texturing, having that on a molded part, that's in the other references as well. So when you look at the combination that way, all you need from Tamashima is the suggestion to do that on a straddle-ridden vehicle or on an ATV, the rationale being to apply the well-known solution, texturing, to the well-known problem, scratching of a smooth plastic surface. So the board's decision is very detailed on that topic and clearly supported by substantial evidence. And I guess I will suggest then that the easiest ground to affirm on is probably ground three, which is Tamashima plus Kia. As the board found,
if we affirm on that ground, do all other arguments fail? Articat's arguments?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
If we affirm on that ground on Tamashima, then do all of Articat's arguments fail? The remaining arguments?
Yes. And I can address the other arguments, certainly. The Tamashima one, I was just finishing up, that Kia discloses unitarily.
Why is that? Are the other arguments mainly attorney argument? There's no expert or any other type of evidence?
All of the other arguments are clearly reviewed for substantial evidence, and they're just attorney argument versus our expert. And as the board's points out at various points, we don't just have expert testimony, but our experts cited documentary evidence for each point that the board relies on. And so it is that showing and that evidence versus attorney argument on all the rest of the issues, the fender, motivation to combine, long-felt need that they raise, etc. So that is correct. And for that third ground, they really didn't argue anything about the Tamashima Kia ground below, never disputing that Kia shows smooth and textured surfaces for vehicle body panels. And you just apply that to a straddle-ridden vehicle and you have the invention. That's what the board found. There's no further argument on appeal on that ground three involving the Kia reference. I do have some more time. The last issue I was going to address is whether they waived arguments regarding the dependent claims, which have some of the specific locations of texturing, and the fact is that they did.
And I think, if I remember right, they make a fairly, punchy point, which is, what were we doing spending all this time arguing about the meaning of adjacent if it wasn't to make the point, which I think you can find in at least a sentence or two, that for some of the dependent claims, the relevant surfaces are not adjacent to the things they're supposed to be adjacent to, like the leg.
Sure. Let me address adjacent. So what happened on that term was there was a claim construction dispute. We said adjacent means near. They said it means it shares a common border with. And the board adopted neither of those constructions. The board went with next to. And in rejecting their construction of shares a common border with, they cited our experts' testimony to do that. So they lost the claim construction they wanted, and they haven't appealed that loss. So we have that same claim construction.
Right, but I guess I, if I remember right, I'm pretty sure this is right, that they argued about the claim construction in the patent owner response, and the board addressed the patent, addressed the claim construction issue, and yet your view is that the board could determine that they didn't actually make any substantive argument based on the now construed adjacency term?
I grant you that it's odd, but that is the case, Your Honor. Once they did, if you look at the patent owner response, they have their claim construction section on a date adjacent, but then after that, when you're talking about applying any construction to the prior art, they only argue about...
In your reply, did you say to the board, you don't need to resolve the adjacency claim construction because there is no argument on the substance that applies that claim construction?
I'm not 1,000% sure on what we said. We addressed it substantively for sure. So I think what we said was they didn't make any argument or put in any evidence, and we are correct on the evidence and went on to argue it substantively. Their arguments were on the texturing on Tamashima, motivation to combine, fender terms, and load contact. They simply didn't argue in connection with any of the prior art anything about adjacent the leg and the knee, adjacent the seat. They simply just did not put that in the patent owner response. And we still addressed it substantively, and the board still credited that. I mean, our expert went through adjacent, explained why it's obvious, cited prior art references for straddle-ridden vehicles. There are motorcycles, Gentile and Wolanski references, to show that a person of ordinary skill in the art is going to understand where to put texturing or where scratching may occur. So he went through all that analysis, and that analysis was credited, cited by the board. And that's our evidence versus, again, no arguments in the patent owner response at all. And to the extent we were here today, I guess, attorney arguments on appeal. I think that's all the issues. The other issues didn't come up, and they're just substantial evidence issues where we have evidence and they do not. And so, again, I think I'll, unless there's further questions, I'll cede my remaining time and ask for affirmance on all grounds.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jackson has some rebuttal time if he needs it.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, Polaris presents a misinterpretation of KSR. It's very sneaky, but the suggestion language in KSR and the surrounding cases relate to a suggestion to combine references. It is not a disclosure rule, which has to be expressed and inherent. As to the waiver issue, we discussed this at length in our reply brief. We cite on page 16 of our reply brief a portion of our patent owner response where we say the petition also fails to specifically show how the references disclose the elements when the when the adjacent terms are construed under the BRI. So we did not waive that issue. And then I think, Your Honor, when this panel asks if ground three would resolve all issues, I think the answer is clearly no. The lowest hanging fruit would be the board's discussion in the final written decision of dependent claims 7 through 9. That's in appendix 32. They dispose of claims 7 and 9 with one sentence. They say, for the reasons set forth in the petition, which is supported by the cited evidence, we are persuaded that the petitioner is correct. Well, this court has repeatedly chastised the board for incorporating arguments from a petition by reference and using that as their sole finding to hold claims impatible. There's just no there in the board's discussion of dependent claims 7 through 9. One sentence.
Did you present any expert testimony or evidence in this case?
We did, Your Honor. but we did not rely on it for these arguments.
What else is the board to say in a situation like this, where one side has presents expert evidence, the other side does not?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, Your Honor, as a matter of procedure for dependent claim 7 through 9, they have to present their factual findings. A one-sentence incorporation by reference or citation back simply isn't enough. There are a number of holdings from this court on this point. That's not enough procedurally. At a minimum, I think that warrants a remand. What is their reasoning? We don't know for claim 7 through 9. That answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes.
And then I'd like to point this court to claims 4 through 5, which Judge Taranto briefly mentioned. We agree with the board's claim construction for purposes of this appeal that adjacent means touching or an inconsequential gap. But if you look at Tamashima, you look at the points on that ATV that they identify as adjacent, the leg of the rider, for example, they're nowhere close. They're not touching, and they're not in consequential gap. And this is claims 4 or 5.
Unless the foot is part of the leg. Right.
Even then, I don't see a touching or inconsequential gap. Those side fenders, which in the Kawasaki evidence are removable, different color, looks to be a different material. A rider doesn't impact those when they're getting on an ATV. In fact, their expert apparently has never ridden one. He doesn't testify that he has. You don't get on an ATV that way. And that is why the 678 patent doesn't identify the sides of the fenders or the footwells as body panels that need texturing. They're not the beauty panels, if you were. And the Tamashima reference fundamentally discloses a prior art ATV. If you look at the alleged texturing, assume that it's texturing, it's in the places that are exactly not textured in the 678 patent.
Counsel,
that's not what the 678 patent is about.
You can see your time has expired. We'll take the case on revisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.